We're hoping the turnaround in Dutch Harbor is less than 36 hours.
The Russian fuel tanker headed for Nome reaches Dutch Harbor. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, January 2nd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, proposed changes for the halibut charter fleet.
Keeping the charter fleet within their GHL allocation, but also giving them the opportunity to tell a client, yeah, if you catch a big trophy fish, you can keep it.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. And by the statewide BP Teachers of Excellence Program. Nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Nominations are due by February 14th.
The Russian tanker Renda is arriving in Dutch Harbor today to load gasoline and be inspected before heading through the ice to Nome. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
The Renda should be to Dutch Harbor between 4 and 6 o'clock this afternoon. The ship will be met outside of port at the pilot station, where state pilots and Coast Guard personnel will come on board. Vitus Marine CEO Mark Smith says officials will then begin the inspection process.
They'll likely bring the ship in and put it at anchor, and then we'll start with the tank vessel exam and the port state control exam. Once those examinations are complete and if the vessel is passed, prepare to go into the fuel dock and start the loading procedure.
After being loaded with 300,000 gallons of gasoline, the leaders of the Renda and the icebreaker Healy will meet to prepare for the trip north.
Might be a few logistics items that need to be addressed. Meetings with the captain of the Healy, etc., do a voyage plan toward Nome. We're hoping the turnaround in Dutch Harbor is less than 36 hours.
The Department of Homeland Security granted a Jones Act waiver Friday afternoon for the Russian-flagged Renda to load gasoline in Dutch Harbor. Secretary Janet Napolitano determined that the waiver was, quote, necessary in the interest of national defense. Without the waiver, the tanker would have had to go to Nome without gasoline. The tanker is currently carrying 1 million gallons of diesel that it took on in South Korea. The Renda will be led by its Russian crew of 21 with 3 extra officers on board. Captain Pete Garay of the Alaska Marine Pilots will also be on board for the journey through 300 miles of ice.
Basically get on the Renda and travel from Dutch Harbor to Nome, so he'll be able to help interface between the Renda's bridge and the bridge of the Healy, and he'll be on board and ready to bring the Renda in from 3 miles out when he does get to Nome.
Vitus Marine has submitted its delivery plans to be approved by the State Department of Environmental Conservation by filing an amendment to its oil discharge prevention and contingency plan. The plan calls for the staging of thousands of feet of boom, along with pumps and absorbent material in the case of an emergency. It also says there will be C-130 air support from the Coast Guard with a helicopter on shore. The plan is out for public comment until tomorrow. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
Voters in one of Alaska's most storm-eroded coastal villages will decide tomorrow whether to build a new school 7 miles away, a project one local official believes could hasten efforts to relocate the crumbling community. Janet Mitchell, Kivalina City Administrator, said a yes vote Tuesday also could speed construction of a long-desired road that would provide economic development and better access for subsistence hunters in the Inupiat Eskimo Village. Kivalina is a community of more than 400 people, 625 miles northwest of Anchorage. It's built on an 8-mile barrier reef between the Kivalina River and Chukchi Sea and is reachable only by boat or plane. Sea ice historically protected the village, whose economy is based in part on fishing plus subsistence hunting of whale, seal, walrus, and caribou. But with climate change, the ice is forming later and melting sooner. And that has left it unprotected longer from storm waves and surges that pummel coastal communities in Alaska. Mitchell said Kivalina was 54 acres in size decades ago, and erosion has squeezed it to half that size. (laughs) The Nome Police Department responded Friday afternoon to reports of a body found on the beach west of town. Police identified the deceased as 58-year-old Napoleon Bergamaschi. Bergamaschi's body was located about a quarter mile down the beach. Police say he has a camp nearby and was close to his residence when he was found. He was dressed in several layers of winter gear. Nome police said in a statement that they do not suspect foul play. They do not know whether Bergamaschi died from natural causes or from exposure. The body has been sent to the state medical examiner for an autopsy. Temperatures last week in Nome were frigid, dipping as low as 32 below zero. Guided anglers in southeast Alaska may be able to keep some bigger halibut next summer. At a recent meeting, the North Pacific Fishery Management Council recommended a change in the size limit that restricted charter businesses last season. From member station KFSK in Petersburg, Matt Lichtenstein reports.
Under the proposal, guided anglers in southeast would be allowed to keep one halibut a day up to 45 inches long, or they could keep one halibut that's 68 inches or bigger. The measure is called a reverse slot limit, and the North Pacific Council recommended it to replace the straight 37-inch maximum size limit that charter operators worked under last season. Heath Hilliard is executive director of the Southeast Alaska Guides Organization, or SEAGO. He says the recommendation came out of the council's Charter Management Implementation Committee, which included five charter skippers from southeast.
You know, none of the options we were considering for 2012 would we ever describe as ideal, but we, you know, talking to operators, we felt like this reverse slot limit was the best option for the most number of people throughout the region.
Prior to last season, the Southeast Charter Fleet had been regularly exceeding its annual allocation of halibut, its guideline harvest level. In the past few years, federal fishery managers responded by cutting the client bag limit in half from two fish to one per day in the region, permanently limiting the number of operators who can fish halibut, and this past season, imposing the 37-inch maximum size restriction. There's also a broader set of regulations called a catch-sharing plan that's still in the works, but so far, the 37-inch limit appears to have had the most immediate impact, as the 2011 charter fleet's catch totaled 388,000 pounds in southeast. That was only half the GHL and well below half the previous year's catch. The average weight of a charter-caught halibut plummeted, and according to Hilliard, so did the sale of charter trips.
You know, what charter operators in southeast experienced was, you know, a dramatic downturn in their business because of you know, the loss of, you know, reasonable-sized fish, and particularly when you talk about Petersburg, which relies heavily on halibut during the month of July in particular, and Gustavus throughout the year, they really need, you know, their clients need the opportunity for a trophy-class fish.
Even if they don't catch a trophy fish, the newly recommended measures would allow a guided angler the chance to bring home a significantly bigger fish than they could this past season. According to North Pacific Fishery Management Council Executive Director Chris Oliver, the council saw the reverse slot limit as a way to meet the needs of both industry and management.
You know, we won't know for sure till we go through a season with it, but we think it has a very good chance of working for both sides. You know, keeping the charter fleet within their GHL allocation, but also giving them the opportunity to tell a client, yeah, if you catch a big trophy fish, you can keep it.
The charter restrictions are part of a broader effort to address a decade-long decline in the amount of halibut that are big enough to harvest, which is called the exploitable biomass. Scientists say there are lots more individual fish, but they're growing too slowly. Just in southeast Alaska, the commercial fleet's seen its catch reduced by roughly 80% over the past 6 years. The council's reverse slot limit recommendation next goes to the Halibut Commission, which is expected to consider the proposal during its annual meeting in January. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new 2012 fee structure for Denali Park.
We are not shaking people down to try to collect that, but realistically, we collect most of our fees through the bus reservations.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska.
The Clean Water Act settlement between Trident Seafoods and the Environmental Protection Agency might not be quite settled. St. Paul's Tribe, Native Corporation, and Fishing Association are pushing the federal government to reconsider terms that they say could lead to the closure of their only year-round processing plant. KUCB's Alexandra Gutierrez has more.
In September, the EPA announced that Trident was being fined $2.5 million for hundreds of Clean Water Act violations documented at Alaska plants over the last decade. The company also agreed to spend $30 million on facility upgrades that would limit the discharge of fish waste that can create dead zones on the seafloor. It's the biggest settlement of its kind. All 18 of Trident's plants in Alaska are expected to see business change in one way or another as a result of this agreement. The Accutan plant, for example, has 5 years to develop a filtering process that will let next to nothing through its screens and shrink their waste pile down by half. The Naknek facility has 3 years to get a fish meal plant up and running. But in St. Paul, there are no slated upgrades at the Trident plant, and there's no extended timeline for improvement. Starting this year, the facility there has simply been banned from releasing any amount of fish waste between May and November, around the time that fishing gets hot and that the shrinking population of fur seals gathers on the island. Since the Trident facility is the only shoreside plant in St. Paul and the island's biggest moneymaker, local interests are saying that this rule could torpedo the economy there. According to a letter sent to the Department of Justice by the regional native corporation TDX, which leases property to Trident, the discharge ban would, quote, effectively shut down the facility until Trident can provide for other expensive arrangements, if it decides to stay at all. Because of that, it's asking the government to suspend the settlement language that affects St. Paul, or stay the decree entirely if that's not possible. The Central Bering Sea Fishermen's Association expresses similar concerns. In its letter, the Community Development Quota Group states that a restriction during that time period would prevent the plant from processing up to $5 million worth of halibut and about $1.5 million worth of king crab. They also suggest that about a fifth of the town's population could see their income disappear if the regulation causes the plant to shut down during the profitable summer and fall seasons. But the biggest potential wrinkle for the settlement could be that St. Paul's tribal government says that it wasn't consulted as part of this process. The Aleut community of St. Paul Island argues that the EPA didn't follow federal law and their own policy of consulting Native groups on civil legal matters. Right now, the EPA is currently evaluating these comments, and the agency offered a written statement that it, quote, plans to complete the consultation process prior to finalizing the consent decree. The agency added that part of the reason that it decided to go with an all-out ban on waste during the summer months is that the St. Paul facility is processing a lot more halibut than it did when it first got its discharge permit 2 decades ago, and that the plant is now releasing 50 times as much waste in area waters. Even though the agency doesn't know if there are any dead zones around St. Paul, it says that because of that permit history, along with, quote, routine noncompliance, and the potential effect on sensitive species and habitat, they decided to treat the Trident plant there differently from plants in other parts of Alaska. The agency did not offer a timeline for their decision on the settlement. In Unalaska, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The seafood processing company Ocean Beauty says it will keep its Petersburg plant open in 2012, despite another low pink salmon forecast. The company shuttered the facility in 2010 because of a weak salmon run and processed pinks at another plant in Excursion Inlet near Juneau. Tom Sunderland, the company's vice president of marketing, says the Petersburg plant will process salmon next summer.
Yeah, we'll almost certainly be freezing. Whether we're canning or not isn't determined yet, but the plant will be open. I'm not exactly sure what the plans are, or I don't think the plans are 100% finalized for exactly what we will do. We will be operating it, and at the very least, we'll be operating a freezing operation there.
Both the National Marine Fisheries Service and the Alaska Department of Fish and Game are forecasting another weak return in 2012. NIMS forecasts 19 million pinks harvested, while Fish and Game expects 17 million. The fleet caught 23 million in 2010, which is the parent year for the 2012 fish. This past summer saw a bumper crop of 59 million netted in Southeast. Ocean Beauty typically has more than 160 workers during the summer season. Besides canned pink salmon, it also produces salmon roe along with frozen and fresh chum, coho, and sockeye. Sunderland says the company will employ fewer workers than last year because of the low fish forecast.
I mean, we're just looking at you know, trying to make sure that our fleet and the community are supported as best we can, you know, despite it being a low year. That's all. I mean, this is just an attempt to make sure we're still investing in the community even in a down year. And we'll do absolutely as much as we can. And we've decided that not operating the facility this year wouldn't be the right decision.
Sunderland is optimistic the pink run will come in better than forecast. Ocean Beauty has operated the Petersburg plant since 1985. Icicle Seafoods has the only other canning operation in town. For the sixth time in 7 years, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game is projecting a directed commercial fishery for Taku River king salmon in 2012. The department says the number of Taku Chinook should be up from last season. The forecast calls for a run of about 48,000 kings, with an allowable catch of about 6,700 for commercial fishermen in Alaska. But fishery manager Kevin Monagle says projections don't always turn into reality.
In some cases, we have had a number similar to this, or maybe a little lower, to go after, and we've decided to wait till we had in-season information and to make our management decisions based on that information alone, not the forecast.
Case in point, in 2011, the forecast called for a run of about 41,000 kings with an allowable catch of about 1,500, but a directed fishery was not allowed once managers were able to collect in-season data. Monagle says it can be a difficult fishery to forecast because the Alaska catch is set according to a treaty with Canada, which shares the Taku with the United States, and Canada gets first crack at the fish.
The first 5,000 fish surplus, Canada gets that, and we get none of it. So in recent years, when you have very small surpluses to go after, if the forecast changes even a little bit, 2 to 4%, that U.S. allowable catch goes away.
Monagle says Canadian managers also regulate the Taku King fishery according to in-season data, and that biologists on both sides of the border are in regular communication before and after fishing starts. May 1st is the first day a fishery is allowed to open in Alaska. Monagle says the department will release more information closer to that date.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when we file online for our PFD. You can shelter families in crisis, nourish the hungry and homeless, and protect those who have suffered abuse and neglect. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD through Pick, Click, Give. And good things will happen for the causes you care about. This message sponsored by Providence Health and Services Alaska and North Rim Bank.
The entrance fee at Denali National Park is changing for 2012. Effective immediately, the National Park Service will collect only a $10 per person entry fee. The pass is good for 7 days. The agency is eliminating a former $20 vehicle fee. Denali National Park spokeswoman Chris Pfister says the change resulted from a national audit.
It was determined that what we were doing was confusing, that because we don't have an entrance station, that we really shouldn't be collecting a per-vehicle fee. And so that's really what this has gotten down to, is that we are just clarifying that we are only collecting the per-person fee, which we have been collecting all along for visitors 16 and over, so younger folks still get in for free. And we just clarify what we're doing and making sure that everyone, all of the people who collect our fees, which are anyone who are selling our bus tickets, are all doing the same thing.
Pfister says the entrance fee is also collected through campground reservations, but that people just stopping by the park won't be accosted to pay.
We are not shaking people down to try to collect that, but realistically, we collect most of our fees through the bus reservations.
Denali is the only Alaska National Park that collects an entrance fee. Pfister says a 1987 law instituted the charge as a way to pay for maintenance of Denali's substantial infrastructure, including the 90-mile park road. She says Denali entrance fees brought in $2.3 million in 2010. 80% of the money is withheld for use within Denali Park. The Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development recently added a new online tool to help those who have lost a job or just want to make a career change. The online tool throws the old-fashioned idea of a career ladder out the window and replaces it with a career lattice. KDLG's Daisha Eaton explains.
State economist Todd Mosher highlighted a new online job-finding tool in the December issue of Alaska Economic Trends. As Mosher explains, the new Career Lattice program gives workers who've lost their jobs or are changing careers new ways to think about what's next.
The Career Lattice branches out to occupations that are about the same level. Instead of just identifying occupations for advancement to or from an occupation.
Originally, the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development's Research and Analysis section developed a career ladder tool in 2008. It was just like it sounds, a tool to help people climb up from one occupation to the next. Recently, they rolled out the updated Career Lattice tool, which suggests lateral and horizontal moves to people in related industries as well as the one they've been working in. Mosher says the tool is based on 9 years of tracking workers in Alaska and finding out the career paths they took from one occupation to another. He says researchers analyzed more than 2 million occupation transitions to come up with the lattice. The tool allows you to search more than 800 different occupations and shows you how they overlap. Mosher says in the tightening economy, it's increasingly important for workers to be creative and flexible.
Alaska's doing better than the rest of the country, but we're still at higher unemployment rates than we have been. And any additional ideas or opportunities people can explore to find new employment is always going to be useful. A lot of times a person loses a job and they're out there looking for the exact same job, and perhaps the reason they lost that job is because there aren't any opportunities for that. Using the Career Lattice can give them some additional ideas about related jobs that may fit them that they wouldn't have otherwise thought of.
Say, for instance, you've lost your job as a medical coder at a health corporation. Instead of just looking for another coder job, Mosher says,
taking a look at the Career Lattice, I see that one option would be an executive secretary or administrative assistant, because you would have a lot of common skills and abilities as a coder. Other options would be an eligibility and loan interviewer. And there are a number of clerk jobs, file clerks, general office clerks, receptionists, and information clerks.
As Mosher explains, workers can use the Lattice tool in a variety of ways.
When they go on the Lattice, they'll see a link that says how to use the Career Lattice. And when they click on that, there's three different examples, and one of those examples would be an advancement to a goal occupation. That would be like the entry-level job seeker or the student who's trying to plan a career and they're exploring different occupations. The other scenario would be advancement from a current occupation. And then the other scenario would be someone that's looking for something immediately.
The new tool is something Mosher says he hopes will give Alaska workers who use it an edge in their job search.
It recognizes that there are overlapping skills and abilities between different occupations. And that's what makes them related, and it makes it realistic for people to transfer between these different occupations. The more occupations you are aware of that you may qualify for or be able to train for, the better off you are.
You can find the new Career Lattice tool on the Alaska Department of Labor and Workforce Development's website. In Dillingham, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Since 1966, boys and girls clubs in Alaska have provided thousands of young people with a safe place to learn and grow after and before school when they have free time and need positive, productive experiences. Demetrius Preston spent time as a child at the Mountain View Boys and Girls Club in Anchorage and then returned as a volunteer. Currently a journalism major at University of Alaska Anchorage, he offers this look at the man at the center of the Mountain View Club, Dave Barney. Barney, the father of five children who has a master's degree in social work, is known by the kids of Mountain View simply as Mr. Dave.
If you've ever visited Mountain View, then you know that there is one thing the community never has a shortage of. Children. After school lets out, many of the children can be seen walking down Price Street. Some of them go directly home after school, but most of them pay a visit to the nearby Boys and Girls Club first. While some kids go to the club for tutoring, meals, or to play games, many of them go or just to interact with club manager Dave Barnum. Known to his members simply as Mr. Dave, Barney uses a little bit of tough love to help his members work on developing their natural giftings.
I've got kids of my own, and I don't treat these kids a whole lot different than I treat my own kids. I enjoy them. I enjoy my job. I don't even really look at it as a job. I'm just blessed and fortunate to be in this position. I'm grateful for this opportunity. And yeah, the kids are great. I just try to, you know, get them in conversation, get them engaged, find out what their interests are. Just build on that. It's all about connection. Whatever that takes.
The members are only at the club for a few hours a day, so Mr. Dave makes sure they stay busy with a variety of different activities.
I think, childhood is such an impressionable time. And it's also one of the best times of your life. You know, you're not mucked down with all the responsibilities that you have later on. You know, putting food on the table, clothes on your back, and all that good stuff. A lot of that's taking care of you as a child, which, it can lead to idle time. And you know what they say about idle time. If it's not occupied, you know, it can lead you down certain paths. So that's just what we try to do here, is what are these kids going to do with their idle time? You know, we work on everything from socialization and being accountable and respectful of yourself and others, and try to give them opportunities that they might not otherwise have. Through some of our field trips and outings, and find out what these kids are interested in, and then we try to find a way to make it possible through volunteers such as yourselves or other opportunities out there in the community.
With so many creative outlets available to them at the Boys and Girls Club, Mr. Dave doesn't see any reason why his membership remain idle.
Recently, we've been blessed with the recording studio, and even more recently with the drum room, which has live music, musical instruments in it. We've got the gym is a huge draw. These kids eat, sleep, drink basketball. We did a flag football league in the summer. Pretty much, you know, what I can't stand and what my mama told me is being bored. And mom used to say, the only people that get bored are boring people. So what is it you want to do? That's what we ask the kids. That's why I, you know, encourage my staff. Find out what these kids want to do and then find a way to make it happen.
That profile was produced by Demetrius Preston. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Nome, Matt Lichtenstein and Joe Vicknicki in Petersburg, Alexandra Gutierrez in Unalaska, Casey Kelly in Juneau, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dacia Eaton in Dillingham, and Demetrius Preston in Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
BP, supporting public broadcasting in Alaska.
And by
Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. 8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick. So quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.